amanecer lo ves a la luz de la aurora, lo que tanto aclamamos la noche al caer.
This is a Building Bridges, your community and labor report special. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
The battle for immigrants' rights has emerged as the most significant civil and labor rights struggle in the U.S. since the 1960s. Recently, Building Bridges hosted a live forum to analyze the hotly debated immigration proposals pending in the federal legislature. On today's program, we'll present excerpts from two of the panelists. Later in the program, we'll hear from Marlene Falou, host of Dialogo de Costa a Costa, a daily national show on HITN-TV. But first,
Myra Peters-Quintero is someone who works at the NYU Immigration Clinic, which is really one of the preeminent advocacy groups for immigrant labor rights, and certainly is a major theoretician in looking at issues of policy and legislation, and so I am very pleased to have her with us, Myra Peters-Quintero.
As someone working in the field of immigrant rights, representing low-wage immigrant workers and collaborating with community-based organizations, this has been an intense and incredible time to be in this field. The recent proposals occupy a lot of our time. The surge of people in the streets has been invigorating, and immigrant workers have been organizing and fighting back for a long time. And these immigration reforms are horrible, but it's not to say that our existing immigration framework is much better. These attacks coming out of Congress now don't feel so new. In my world, we are constantly reflecting on other dark moments in immigration reform. For example, in 1996, when we saw the passage of a set of horrifying and draconian laws that set off a massive banishment of our immigrant brothers and sisters over the last decade. It wasn't brought to light in the same way, and we didn't have a chance to take to the streets. But I assure you that they were as bad as the laws that are being contemplated now, with the difference being that those passed, and now we've suffered horrifying effects for the last 10 years as a result. Among immigrant worker advocates, we reflect a lot on 1986, which is when the Immigration Reform and Control Act was enacted. It was a time when amnesty was granted as a trade-off for imposing sanctions for the first time on employers who hired undocumented workers. It was a time when there was no penalty created for employers who want to pay undocumented workers a lower wage for the same work as documented workers. There was no penalty for employers who discriminate with respect to undocumented workers. It was only a penalty for hiring, and the penalty only ran to the employer. But everyone in the room, it's commonly known that employers have suffered no sanctions post-1986. They've in fact reaped some of the greatest benefit from hiring undocumented workers. Employers today are hiring and exploiting undocumented workers at the same and higher rates than before the employer sanctions provisions came into effect. So the enforcement of the employer sanctions provision has been a joke. So it's no surprise that sweatshop employment is booming and flourishing in New York and elsewhere. It's a ripe time for employers to recruit undocumented workers, exploit them without impunity. What the 1986 employer sanctions and the reform in 1986 did do successfully is create an underground world of criminalized employment where undocumented workers lost entirely their ability to sell their labor freely, which has caused the power balance between employer and worker to tilt entirely in the employer's direction. I see the results of these 86 reforms every single day. Rampant abuse of minimum wage and overtime laws, complete flouting of health and safety standards. I could go on and on. Employers seek out and hire exclusively undocumented workers. And it's very explicit in low-wage work settings, entirely acceptable for an employer to openly take the position. I tell my clients all the time, bring me other workers I'm looking to hire, but I will only hire undocumented workers. It's explicit and it's blatant. It's totally acceptable for employers in the low-wage work industry to announce that they don't pay the minimum wage or overtime. it's acceptable to announce that overtime hours are mandatory. If you don't work the amount of hours that the employer demands of you, you'll be fired. And it's clear at the outset of most of my clients' employment relationships that if they become injured on the job, they'll be fired. So this scheme that we adopted in 1986 of criminalized employment for undocumented workers has also silenced many workers who are afraid to speak out against illegal employment practices because doing so would mean coming out from underground and all of the vulnerability that comes with that. At the same time, the scheme created an incentive structure for employers to prefer undocumented workers. Ironically, then, the provision that was designed in response to the same kind of nativist fears we're hearing now about outside laborers depressing wages, that very scheme is what, in many ways, facilitated the decreased wages and the decreased power of workers in the labor field. So with this as a backdrop, I look at the immigration reform debates of today. There is nothing currently on the table that will benefit immigrant workers. The newest trade-offs I'm very fearful about. What's on the table today in the name of immigration reform is legalization for massive, complicated, punitive enforcement measures. Legalization also within quotes because it comes with so many strings attached that it's hard to think of it even in terms of what we saw in 1986. So without going through the various provisions in detail, I thought I would just highlight a few issues that are common to all of the proposals that have significant impact on immigrants and immigrant workers in particular. The proposals we see today, like in 1986, are structured as legalization in exchange for enforcement. The current legalization program is expected to benefit approximately 4 million immigrants, and the trade-off will bring massive new border and interior enforcement provisions. The kind of enforcement provisions we're discussing would be crushing to many immigrant communities and communities of color. There's a lot of space in media to discuss the guest worker programs and legalization and not enough time even in advocacy circles to really pin down the kind of enforcement provisions we are contemplating adopting. Kinds of provisions on the table should make us ask ourselves whether any legalization package would justify tolerating what will be a guaranteed erosion of immigrant and civil rights. Under the current proposals, immigrants who commit minor criminal offenses will be exposed to detention and deportation consequences like none we've seen before. We will see families again, as we saw post-1996 reforms, separated and destroyed from each other when one member commits a minor offense. The definition of which crimes would make an immigrant deportable or which crimes would make an immigrant unable to legalize will be widely expanded. They may apply retroactively to crimes that were committed decades ago when the person who committed the crime couldn't have contemplated the kind of consequence it brings. And on top of that, the due process rights of immigrants will be restricted as they are prohibited from challenging in court the legality of the consequences of many of these provisions. In addition, the enforcement provisions being proposed clash directly and will undermine the very goals of legalization by rendering many undocumented workers permanently ineligible to obtain legal status. I'll focus in on one important provision of the compromise bill. It creates new fraud offenses. If an immigrant admits to committing passport, visa, or document fraud, or a host of other newly defined frauds, even if that person had not actually been charged with the offense, never convicted, just by their own admission, admits to have participated in this behavior, that immigrant will be deportable and unable to adjust her status. The proposals also expand the types of offenses that constitute fraud to include submitting any false information to an employer on an I-9 employment eligibility verification form. So as you know, at the time of hire, what the 1986 laws created was a screening mechanism by which employers are required to check to see if the new employee has authorization to work in this country. Anyone in contact with the immigrant worker world knows that it's not unusual to hear of immigrant workers with employers who encourage them to bring false documents, or employers who outright purchase or broker the purchasing of documents. I've heard it firsthand from enough clients to say that this is widespread. So the new provision has the potential to affect millions of undocumented workers by making these kinds of document fraud offenses aggravated felonies also. They would be subject to mandatory detention, which means a judge would not have discretion to release the person. They'd be housed in a prison facility. They would be barred from applying for any immigration relief, and they would be permanently banned from returning to the United States for providing these false documents. So the interesting intersection here is that first we had the criminalization of employment created by the 1986 reform, which forced the widespread use of false documents for employment purposes. And now legalization is being offered, in theory, to the same workers who were driven underground in 1986 and forced to use the documents, only in exchange for a set of new enforcement provisions which would further criminalize their behavior by using false documents. There are millions of workers who will be permanently ineligible to adjust their status under the current scheme. Second, the proposals provide for increased worksite enforcement. The Judiciary Committee bill increases the number of worksite enforcement investigators by a minimum of 2,000 investigators added every year for a 5-year period. There is nothing in the provisions about increased enforcement of labor laws. There is no recognition of the need for enforcement of labor laws, and an employer is virtually guaranteed that he will never be prosecuted for violating labor laws or providing unsafe working condition. This is something that undermines the rights of all workers. Immigrant workers and Latinos in particular have the highest workplace and fatality accident rate in the nation. There's virtually no enforcement against the employers who provide these unsafe and unhealthy work sites. Indeed, employers continue to seek ways to even avoid paying those workers who are injured on their job by arguing in workers' compensation settings and in tort cases that the medical bills and compensation for workers who are undocumented should be denied because of their immigration status. We're dealing with incredibly unscrupulous employers. They recruit undocumented workers, they exploit them because of their immigration status, and then they work the legal channels to see how they can get out of providing a remedy. Yet in our new proposals, we see no system of workplace protection proposed, only enforcement leading to greater deportation and detention. And finally, I'll just touch very briefly on the issue of the guest worker program. My personal belief is that this would be disastrous for workers. I'll add my voice to the chorus of people concerned with this notion of bringing a captive group of workers who, any way you slice it, even with new amendments and bells and whistles to the provision, the bottom line is those workers who come on a guest worker visa have pressure to accept reduced wages and substandard working conditions because of the term of their visa. There is no meaningful mechanism to enforce labor protections in the guest worker proposal, and there's no way for these workers to seek adjustment later. It's a formula for disaster, and we have a dangerous precedent with the Bracero program earlier this century. So where language like compromise and legalization usually have positive connotations, in this debate it's very dangerous. The mobilization and galvanization of people to fight back has been inspiring without a doubt. However, we have further to go. We need a rights-based discourse where we talk not about them being willing to do our dirty jobs, but about how to bring humane and just modifications to what is already a terrible immigration system. These are rights of all humans. It is important that the debate shift. Even without the proposals on the table now, the laws towards immigrants are terrible. We punish immigrants differently from citizens for committing the same offenses. We provide no labor law enforcement despite knowing the widespread abuse occurring in most low-wage industries, and we allow for our undocumented and legal immigrant communities to be divided. In 1986, our government created an underclass of laborers who are criminalized and forced to accept the most undesirable, inhumane working conditions. This has damaged us all, and I hope not to repeat this again. To not end on a completely down note, I tried to reflect on something uplifting that I could share. And this week I had the honor of joining a group of 12 day laborers, immigrant rights activists, who ran cross-country. They started in California months ago, running with sacred staffs from their ancestral lands for months across the nation and ended in New York on Friday. It was a simple message. It was a protest for peace and dignity. They ran, They ran one city at a time across the entire nation and were received warmly by activists and citizens alike. After becoming entangled in the complicated provisions in the bill through my work and having my head bursting with ideas about reform, it was refreshing to take their pure and simple message and to be reminded that this is about humanity.
Well, we are very fortunate with all of our panelists this evening, but, you know, very often we rail against mass media, but it's really nice to know that there are times that you have somebody who is a host of a daily show, who has humanity, sensitivity, political consciousness, and really looks at grassroots issues. She's been referred to as a Latina Oprah. Frankly, I think she's much more politically savvy, and it is with great honor that, and I encourage all of you to watch her show, which is daily, and I welcome Malin Falou.
I am delighted. Since the late 70s, I have been involved in the media with the Spanish-speaking community. Some issues have demanded a great deal of energy from our community, such as walkouts, strikes, economic boycotts, civil disobedience, police confrontations, and massive mobilization and protests. We saw one 2 weeks ago protesting for all the invasion and occupation of Iraq. But I never have eyewitnessed a mobilization in the mega proportions that have taken place in this last week. At the national TV talk show that I moderate called Diálogo de Costa a Costa at HITN, Hispanic Information and Telecommunications Network is the only Spanish TV station that is educational. We sponsor a marathon immigration special televised to over 14 million people, with the direct participation of audiences from California to Boston and Chicago to Florida. This grassroots movement by the people to fight for immigration rights calls for each of us to assume the responsibility to participate. Thus, I feel compelled and the need to share with all of you some of my reflections in these historic times for the immigrants in this nation. And this morning I have a conversation with someone who is an immigrant, who now is a legal citizen, but he say, Malin, they deport me 3 times. I was abused. I felt the loneliness. I felt the fear in my face. The immigration people who are in every port could feel like the dogs. You know that the dogs know when you are when you fear them, they know also. And it was, I almost was at the brink of crying, because I say, unless you have been through all those experiences, you really don't know. And sometimes people talk about immigrants with such sardonic tone, with so much depreciation of their characters, their humanity, that is very sad. When we see children as young as 10 years old marching in representation of their parents because they are working and he is with some neighbors or workers risking their claim or losing their jobs to affirm publicly their claim to stay legally and contribute to their families and to this society's well-being, we all need to take action to encourage all our families and friends to get involved and to pay cautious attention to suggested changes in the law. And we have heard this lady all that she has said, it's for us to be all crying at this moment and to feel fear for them and for ourselves, so that we can input our voice and political voting participation if necessary to assist in the identifying alternatives. The changes proposed for the existing immigration laws may change the life of more than 12 million persons in this nation. With the phrase, si se puede, yes, we can, we open our minds to the thousands of possibilities of a fair immigration reform. And I will add, unidos podemos. United we can. Unidos we will survive. Unidos, united, we will thrive. Unidos, united, we will succeed. The history of mankind for many segments of our population has been extraordinarily sad and cruel. Slavery of all kinds, genocide, ethnic cleansing and diasporas, families deprivation and malnutrition, children sexual predators, violence in all shapes and forms, and many other crimes of the spirit. But our human capacity to survive and to grow out of tragedies has eventually prevailed. The 12 million immigrants need to face the reality. As we confront it today, a large number are here without legal papers and with the power brokers in control, manipulated by pressure groups that are self-proclaimed conservative and anti-immigrants, and I would say greed of blood. The general public need to understand what immigrants are asking. The immigrant movement constitutes a precious development. All citizens are leaders in their own right. Everyone is clear of the message and the goals. First, they say, we are not criminals. And second, we need and want an immigration reform that allow us to live our lives legally and proud, to continue making a contribution to the American country while we continue to take responsibility and self-sufficiently care for our families. Hispanic immigrants claim for the same opportunities given to the Jews, Russians, Italians, Polish, Greeks, and Irish in the past. Hispanic immigrants from Mexico to Cape Horn, West Indies, and Spanish Caribbean has settled here for good. Experts agree that any reform of the law necessarily needs to address the causes of this continuous influx of immigrants. At this moment, the discussion of the proposals in Congress is mainly focused on enforcement of the laws and blocking of illegal physical penetration by immigrants inside the United States borders. This framework does not address the causes or real issues of why they immigrate. In the last decade, the influx of immigrants has been mainly from Latin America, specifically from Mexico. In terms of relationship with neighboring countries, the United States policies has concentrated on specific issues, not necessarily focusing on immigration per se, like drug trafficking, the reduction of external debt, asphyxiating to different countries in the region, and on free trade agreements that many argue have not been of benefits for the other countries involved. As a matter of fact, United States has concentrated its efforts, military and human power, in the Middle and Far East. And I think that's an understatement, no? You know what I mean. Leaving Latin America without the substantive attention needed to maintain reciprocal bilateral goodwill. Unemployment, hopelessness, lack of job opportunities, and corruption in higher government levels are some of the continuous problems that have plagued many Latin American countries throughout long periods in the past. In addition, wars, devastating hurricanes, dictatorships, class struggles, drain of professional pools, poor health conditions, lack of adequate housing, and illiteracy present a sad state of affairs, especially for the most disenfranchised. What are the proposals for immigration on the table? In the proposal approved by the House of Representatives last December of 2005, provides increased security and personnel in the frontier, financial and military reinforcement to police stations in the frontier. Homeland Security Department will detain and deport anyone who crossed the frontier illegally. Establish obligatory sentences to all who re-entry without an entrance permit. Make a federal crime of illegally entering the country and establish a central system of verification of permits of employment that every employer must use. In the Senate, the proposal based on Project Kennedy McCain present. Undocumented with more than 5 years in the country will be able to legalize their situation without the need to go out of the country. For that, they will have to work for 6 years pay taxes, learn English, and pay a fine. Undocumented with more than 2 years in the country could legalize their status through a temporary work program. Immigrants with less than 2 years in USA will have to solicit a work permit without any guarantee of entrance. And you already know the consequences of all these points. The project will give away 325,000 permits for temporary work per year. Many politicians have used the immigration argument to win votes. Senator Mel Martinez, representative of Florida, said, and I quote, "We Republicans has won popularity among Latinos, and we are risking that gain when people call us anti-immigrants. We are hurting ourselves in great measure." We need to remind ourselves that Alan Greenspan, former head of economic policy in this country, reported to President Bush that immigrants represent a factor that invigorate the economies of our cities, the service industry, health profession, small business, bodegas, doctors, and the more diversity that make more attractive our tourism packages to guests in our country, and their purchases and housing, general living condition, expenditures. Hispanics are the fastest growing group in the USA. In New York specifically, like in many other cities, immigrants have filled the need for workers or professionals in many fields in which there have been escape of people to suburbs or other countries. They bring their cuisine, their cultural festivals, their diverse points of views, religion, social philosophy, political, energy, and human endeavors. Immigrants come with energies, with desire to work hard, with a definite purpose of seeing to it that their families get education and jobs. This strong source of human energy, we all have the responsibility to help to maximize their fruits, and in contributing to them, we are contributing to re-energize our economies, our cities, our communities, and our families. Thank you very much.
And you were just listening to Marlene Falu, host of Dialogo de Costa a Costa, a daily national show on HITN-TV. And this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.